On the 16th of January of 1992, the peace accords were being signed, and we, still clandestinely, went out of Marazan and arrived at San Salvador, placing our station in the tallest tower of the cathedral. From there, I had the opportunity to broadcast the good news. The war had ended, and peace had been established.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and my apologies for the cutoff there, it's Bathrobs Pier's Broadsides. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
And that was Neil Young from his Living with War. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and Blunders Central. My apologies for cutting off that Radio Venceremos report. I would have been just as interested as the next person. It has to do with finding two streams running at once in the studio and not knowing what to do and being under time pressure. I have 100 excuses, but for those who want to hear that show, it'll be on, I'm told, tomorrow by the V-Man at 9:30 in the morning. So tune in again at 9:30, 101.1 FM. If you want to hear the update on that, I suppose you could try to Google for Radio Venceremos and see what's happening online. And if anybody has any more information about that particular news story and they want to call in and talk about it, please feel free to do so. I am going to move on with my show, which is called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Today is, what is it, the 29th of June already, 2006. God damn, how the years roll forward. This is a show about civil rights in Santa Cruz, local politics, and indeed radio stations like ourselves, underground radio stations, and liberation radio stations. So again, I'm really sorry that that show was cut off. I'm going to be having some guests. In the studio with me is Craig Canada, homeless man with the laptop, also known as Palm Springs Bum. You can catch him on that website, www.palmspringsbum. He's been doing a lot of research into, kind of on-the-ground research, getting a few kicks in the butt, so to speak, as he proceeds to try to find housing in Santa Cruz, to find a place to be able to survive. He's a medical marijuana user. He's a person who's suffered discrimination in housing. He's also gay, and he's suffered some hostility among homeless people and homeless workers at the Homeless Services Center, he says, because of that. And recently has been barred from the Homeless Service Center for, what, yelling back, shouting back, speaking up. He'll be talking about that. And we talked about that yesterday at the HUF meeting. HUF is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group concerned with restoring civil rights, making sure that there's some kind of minimal protections in place. Usually this means actually just having a person to come with you to say what the fuck is going on here if you're getting excluded from a program or a locale or if you're getting badly treated by the police, to find out if, you know, to have the excuses run by or the reasons told or have some kind of mediation happen. That can happen through HUF. And you can be a part of HUF if you're interested. Call 423-HUF, call 423-4833. That's the phone line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Voicemail, leave a message, I'll get back to you. You can also check out the HUF website, huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz.org. Or you can, if you feel like you come to a meeting, they sometimes get pretty interesting. Had some interesting discussions yesterday with, you may remember, a sociology professor from Brockhurst, I believe it is. Am I right about that? In Massachusetts. We had her on the air on, was it on Thursday or Sunday? Anyway, a radio show or two ago. She's been studying RVs, discrimination, I think it was Sunday, against folks in RVs. And people have to live in their RVs in three different cities in California. One of them is Santa Cruz, Santa Barbara, and I believe Solano County was the other county she was looking into. She headed the program down in Santa Barbara for a year, which actually actively tries to provide spaces for homeless people in RVs, though they have only 40 spaces and several hundred RVs. But at least, in a way, that's a step up from Santa Cruz, which has theoretical access to, for if you have an RV, you can park in a church parking lot or a business parking lot if you can get the written permission of the church and or the business. But it's easier said than done, although it is possible in some cases. I actually don't have any stats, I wish I did, on the number of people in RVs in church and business parking lots in Santa Cruz. I estimate homeless people in Santa Cruz at 1,500 to 2,000, maybe 200 to 300 people in vehicles. And, of course, shelter space tonight in the ISSP, Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, run by the city for 40-40. That's 40 and 40, 40, 40 people. It's the rest of them face criminalization after 11 o'clock at night under the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, which I may have described to you several thousand times before. In the studio with me is Craig Canada, who's got his laptop ready. The guy seems to be ready to kick a little butt here, or maybe give us a few stats, or maybe, who knows, send out the words and the warning on the web. Hey there, Craig, how you doing?
Well, all things considered, not too bad. I stink. I haven't had a shower for a week.
I can't smell it, but again, my stuffed up nose. So it gets too bad. I'll just have to have some more hot tea here.
Yeah, I had some bad days. You know, I've been spending my time, and this is a bit personal, but it's true. I cried myself to sleep last night. I woke up crying this morning. Smoked the last bowl I had this morning, and my mood changed, and I've been in a fairly good mood all day. It's just amazing how that works.
Medical marijuana.
That's right.
So what about medical marijuana in terms of, you know, we have a second club opening up, maybe, or I guess it is opening up. It's opening up in a month or so. Not quite sure when it is opening up, but it's in Harvey West. There was some controversy about it from the neighbors who didn't like the idea of all the clubs being concentrated in Harvey West. And, of course, that's due to the Rotkin-Matthews medical marijuana zoning laws passed by the city council in 2000 that killed the existing clubs run then, except, of course, for WHAM, which isn't really a club. It's a collective, a cooperative, which doesn't really have any space for new people and wasn't a place for me to get medical marijuana anyway. But have you been able to use the low-income, Lisa Molino of Greenway, Compassionate Youth Center or whatever it's called, has said that she's willing to give out marijuana at cheap or zero or whatever discounts anyway. What's the story on that?
Well, what they have been doing with me, and I'd like to mention that you mentioned that I've been banned from the homeless center. At the time, I was in the process of getting a county card. I carry my documentation with me, my doctor's recommendation, and I also have it online just in case.
That's a card for medical marijuana use, not a card to go to the homeless service center, right?
Right. This county ID card for the medical marijuana. And found out that in order to do that, you have to have a utility bill. That's their procedure. And so I called them up and I said, well, you know, I'm homeless. What am I supposed to do? And they said, well, you can get the Homeless Services Center to, vouch for you to say that you're homeless and you've been a resident. You know, I've been here for a year and a half now. And my response was, well, I haven't had a good interaction with them, and is there anything else you can do? But I was in the process of getting a card, and, of course, the reason I'm bringing this up is you ask about the discounts with Greenway and Lisa Molino. And what she's been doing with me is every now and then when I go over there, they'll give me something extra. Now, what I understand is they have a policy where they have stickers they put on the cards, which you're supposed to get half price or anywhere from 10%, I guess, to half price off. And, you know, since I don't have a county card, I assumed, you know, I never asked for a sticker. I don't suppose they would put them on my California driver's license. But that's what they have been doing. It's been sporadic, and if they don't give it, I don't ask. It's difficult for me to do. I did go in there a couple of times a month or two ago, and actually one time I was told to come back when I had some money. They gave me a little bit, but it was they didn't realize, I guess, who I was and my situation, the person that did that.
Have you spoken to Lisa directly on this issue?
And the last conversation I had with her about it, which was, I guess, a month or two ago, she said they approve it, and I didn't say anything again as far as I assumed if they were, you know, that if they approve it, there I am talking to them about it, so it's, you know, the ball's in their park, and I didn't say, well, what about me? And she was most generous at that time. It was also my birthday, I believe.
You know, I think we talked about this yesterday at the meeting, because when I asked you, you're having a similar problem with lockers at the Homeless Service Center and being evicted from the Homeless Service Center, what their appeal process is, and you feel, perhaps quite properly, that, you know, you don't really, I mean, the whole process is so disagreeable to you, you prefer to have as little to do with it as possible. But there is a, you know, one has to know what the appeals procedures are. One has to, in this business, however difficult and disagreeable it is at times, to really sort of make the formal presentation. You know, Lisa, I'm or whoever, you know, I'm not only am I homeless, but I can't get a card because of the procedures. I would like to get normal discounts that people with cards get. Here's my letter. I mean, I am under a doctor's care. And, you know, also at the homeless service center, you know, I've had a locker here for a period of time. I don't feel I was fairly excluded. I think it's important to make the formal presentation. And I know it's easy for me sitting in the studio and living in a room indoors to say that, but it's just, I would say it anyway.
That kind of thing is difficult for me. It's partly my background, my upbringing, and it's partly my disability, because when I have an emotional charge about something, it's just very difficult for me to present myself well. And I often say things that I don't mean, and sometimes things that aren't necessarily true, in order to please people. I almost wish I hadn't got off on this.
I think we all do. You know, I mean, that happens. And particularly if you're vulnerable and under pressure. It's just, I know it's difficult to do when you're getting a lot of shit from someone. You don't want to turn around and sort of, you know, say, okay, let me speak to your superior. You know, here's a piece of paper describing the date, time, and place of my concern. What? Show me a copy of your appeals procedures. I know. I'm hoping that you will do that at the Homeless Service Center, since you only have a couple days left before your locker stuff will be, what, confiscated and dumped or some such thing? Or?
Well, I don't know this. I'm concerned about it. Now, I've had a locker there since April a year ago. That is April before past April. And it seems to me that what they do is they generally give people 2 to 4, sometimes even 6 weeks after they don't pay their rent before they throw their stuff out. I think they might make an exception with me. My rent's supposed to be paid through the end of this month. I do hope to get the stuff out tomorrow, because, in my opinion, it's just past the point where that there's going to be any kind of solution for me as far as dealing with that place and those people. You mentioned going to the superior, and I actually did try that once. I went to their website. I tried to find out how to get in touch with the board. I think, the best I can recall, I haven't looked again lately, but the best I recall, I could only find one number there. And it was essentially to the lot manager, Marcus, and he was the person that I wanted to talk to the board about. And another thing, you talked about filing a grievance, and if this is the standard kind of... I have filed 2 grievances myself since I've been there. And I have been told, I haven't looked, but I have been told that they put them all on a rack in the office so that everyone that goes in there can see them. I'm not sure that's appropriate, and if you're dependent on those people and you file a grievance against one of the staff,
you may find yourself discriminated
against. You might win the battle, but you'll lose the war.
In the future, yeah. You know, that's always, obviously, that's always, you know, a danger and a threat. We're talking with Craig Canada, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris, and this is called Bathrobs Pierre's Broadsides. The call-in number, if you want to call in, is 831-427-3772. Again, 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also get in touch with Free Radio by going to www.freakradio.org. Freakradio.org is actually the place to go if you want to try to get a program yourself. There are some spots open, and there might be an opportunity for you to do a show. So, you know, let us know if you're interested. You can download an application from the website, freakradio.org. And you can also get more information by phone, if you want, by calling the Free Radio voicemail line at 427-4523, 427-4523. If you want to catch me off air, again, the phone number to call is the old Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-423. HUFF 423 Huff, which is 4833. Talking to Craig Canada, if you want to join us, you can. I have a call-in scheduled soon from Rico Thunder. You may remember Rico. He's a man who's been concerned with restoring police accountability in Santa Cruz, so that if you're planning a peaceful event, you don't have to worry about an undercover agent being next to you, or perhaps you do anyway, at least not a local undercover agent. Well, you still have to worry about state and federal.
Trying to sell you drugs?
Trying to sell you drugs, or trying to sell you violent alternatives, or trying to snoop on what's going on, or gathering information on you that will show up on files you know nothing about, and maybe be the basis of an officer's making a bad choice somewhere down the road when they see this information that you don't even have any access to. Sounds like that could be RICO now. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Craig.
Hey, Robert, this is Crow.
Hey, Crow, make it short if you can. We're expecting RICO to call in.
Okay. As far as what the street scene is, I ran into a guy, and he was living in his RV, handicapped, and the cops spray-painted his tires, bit the big X's and O's on him. And he's having a problem getting all that spray paint off his tires. You know, it's an act of vandalism. That 3 days ago.
Now, where was this guy? And give us some more. Do you have any more details? This is all his account.
I don't have any more details of where he was.
Uh-huh.
But I noticed him at the beach today, and I asked him what happened, and he told me cops spray painted his vehicle because he parked in the wrong spot, he said.
Now, that sounds like it's always possible, but it sounds like an unusual procedure. It's the first time I've ever heard this happening.
It's happened before. We've talked about it before. Cops spray painting the tires with
really?
X's to mark his vehicle's been there too long.
You know, actually, I think you're talking about so that they can see if the vehicle has moved or not.
Yes. But, I mean, they big, giant spray paint marks with X's and arrows.
Well, that's interesting because, of course, that would be vandalism by the police.
I mean,
they can chalk it, but they can't do that legally, I think. Did he say he had actually witnessed a police officer doing it, or?
No. I just asked him the question when it happened. I didn't ask him where. I should have. But I told him I'd talk to you today.
About it, definitely, and
get it on the air and let people know what the shit's going on.
You know, I'm going to be playing later on in the show or on Sunday when the show comes back at 9:30 in the morning. Some interviews with you from your successful protest on Sunday when you
were
informing the populace about the parking garage paranoia law.
Very good. And many more actions to come to let everybody know.
That would be great.
All right.
Please call in again. Call in again later in the show if you'd like. I want to make sure the phone lines are open now.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Hey,
bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. And, yeah, Crow is a man who's been organizing protests against this 15-minute trespass law, which the Santa Cruz City Council passed, making it illegal to enter a parking garage in Santa Cruz without a vehicle or car unless you're walking directly through. And even if you do have such a vehicle or car when you're parking it, you have to be gone from the garage within 15 minutes, and you can only spend no more than 15 minutes getting back to your car. It's a very peculiar law, actually, designed, of course, to deal with problems of criminal behavior in the parking garages, such as perhaps individuals, police officers or not, illegally spraying your vehicles or vandalizing your vehicles or graffitiing or standing about, as Rotkin said, lurking while vulnerable people like women and old people go to their cars and perhaps aggressively panhandling or sleeping in the garage or having parties there, masturbating on all fours, as SEIU worker Leslie Scaligata, I'm not sure what her name is, said during one of the hearings.
How do you do that?
You know, we were wondering if she could demonstrate that for us, but she so far has not come up with that. On all fours, yes.
How on earth?
I don't know. It sounds like something out of a graphic movie, which I may actually have to rent and check out, because, I mean, I'm always up for broadening my experiences. Well, not always. Usually I'm not, but perhaps on this occasion I will be. Anyway, we're going to be hearing more from Crow later, either in person directly through the phone line. And again, you can call us if you want. If you've got comments, 427-3772. While I am waiting for a call from RICO Thunder, I'm also aware of the fact that RICO may, for some reason, not call in. That does happen, though. I did talk to him before the show started, and I am hopeful that I will be hearing from him. I'm going to talk a little bit now by looking at the IndieBay.org website. That's Santa Cruz Indie Media at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, where RICO has recently been quite busy. You may remember way back in December, police infiltrated the meetings of the DIY Do-It-Yourself Last Night Parade. And some people say, well, what's the big, yuck? So what? They spied on the parade. You know, people doing the parade said they didn't want to have any rules. They didn't want to get any permits. So these are police just checking up on them. Well, the fact of the matter is that there were no regulations in place that clarified when police can spy on Santa Cruz citizens who are engaging in peaceful protest or organizing for that activity. And there was quite a scandal that erupted after that, We have a caller. Maybe this could be the police chief calling in to give us some clarification and guidance. Hang on. Hi, is this Police Chief Scary calling in?
No, and it's not Rico Thunder either. I have an idea.
Hang on, I think we're
going to... And I have a video camera.
You have a video camera and an idea. Cool, caller.
What's
your idea?
And then there's both of you guys are in there.
We certainly were
both wondering about how you would masturbate on all fours.
Well, it was
well,
a passing thought.
Why don't you guys try it
major,
right now?
It's not a major topic, but the video...
I know, but you guys could try it right
now.
If
you bring in the video...
You guys could, like, give each other, pointers and tips. And if you want, I can come down and make a video of
it. You could come down, but could you come as well, is the question.
Well, it's probably not my thing.
Well, now, why do you assume...
Watching guys masturbate is definitely not my thing.
You've got to broaden your horizons, caller. I mean, come on.
I know. But I just thought it was kind of interesting. I thought maybe the two of you could actually try doing that right now. I mean, Robert, you're always trying to broaden your horizons. What's your caller's name? Or your guest name?
It's Craig.
Craig?
Well, Craig, are you interested in...
did you say you were gay?
Well, yes, but I don't think that's going to help me masturbate on all fours.
Maybe Robert could pose for you or something.
It's a possibility. We may need your help in doing this, caller. So if you want to come on down
and get
someone
else.
If someone helps, it's not masturbation.
I mean, and you've slept with women before, and I've slept with men before. So it wouldn't be broadening my horizons, and it wouldn't be broadening your horizons, but it would be broadening your horizons, Robert, hook up with Craig right now.
I don't think it's a gender thing.
I know, on the air, dude. On the air. Let's do it.
Well, I don't know what to say, caller, except I maybe have to call the FCC to get them to look into your questionable suggestions.
Oh, well, okay.
All right, then.
Okay. And I just want to say to Craig, I think I know you. I think, do you sometimes push a cart, too?
I think I have pushed a cart twice when I've been walking down the street and my bags are too heavy and there's a shopping cart there and it's
Craig
like...
Craig isn't usually a cart pusher, I don't think.
Do you wear a hat sometimes?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I think I saw you getting harassed by the cops. You were plugged in with your laptop and I was with a couple of my friends and the cops, like, pulled over and told you had to unplug out of the plug that was on, like, in the middle. You know, it's like the city plug.
No, actually, that hasn't happened to me.
I think
I know the person that it did happen to. If it's only one person. Now, if they're doing it to lots of people, that wouldn't surprise me. But I do know one person that did happen to.
He's a homeless gentleman that pushes a cart and carries a laptop.
Well, now, this one I've never seen push a cart.
Yeah, this guy, I always see him with a cart.
But
anyways, right on.
Hey, well, thank you, caller.
I would really like to hear this masturbating on all fours between the two of you.
Hearing is not going to be good enough. We need to see it. We need your video camera. We'll expect to see you in the studio in about 10 minutes.
All right.
Thank you, caller. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. This may actually turn out to be quite an eventful evening. I'm going to have to start getting limbered up here. I mean, you know, it's, we'll talk about that in a bit. I may have to postpone the sexual athletics. Well, I'm waiting for a call from Rico Thunder. Rico, again, has been investigating police spying. And indeed, as I said before, police, without any kind of guidelines, without any kind of sanction or notification to higher authorities other than an okay from Deputy Chief Vogel, decided they were going to infiltrate this actually and volunteer for work with a peaceful political group. You might say, well, you know, what the hey? I say, no, this is not the right way to go, particularly in a city which supposedly is concerned about official misconduct by the NSA, misconduct by the Pentagon, misconduct by the president, by other executive agencies, by the destruction of civil rights by the Supreme Court, which is happening daily around, even though Guantanamo military trials were ruled out today. That's not much consolation for people who have been held there for 4.5 years waiting for trial, and the rest of us sitting around, you know, masturbating on all fours, so to speak, or doing whatever we do during the day. While these other people are essentially suffering a kind of slow death in Guantanamo. So in Santa Cruz, it's important that we decide whether we want the police department to be spying on people at their own whim. If they decide, some illegalities might be happening? Do they have the right to sort of, you know, send people into the ACLU meetings, into gay and lesbian transgender meetings if there's, say, people want to do act up sort of things, protests? They have the right to just sort of make that decision by themselves and wander on in and compile files on people. This is what they did in the good old days, you know, COINTELPRO. And this is what they do, I suppose. This is what they're doing now, I imagine. Let's be realistic. But finally, there was a public outcry about it, and the Public Safety Committee under Mike Rutkin. Well, first thing they did, of course, was the city council assigned to investigate this whole matter the same guy who did the Spygate thing, Deputy Chief Vogel. And Vogel investigated himself and found, not surprisingly, that everything was okay. He didn't violate any rules. There weren't any rules in place anyway. And in order to clear up this matter, Chief Scary created some new rules that essentially said you can spy whenever you think there might be something illegal happening from any of the individuals if they have been if they are suspected of any particular crimes. This would include infractions, not even related to the purpose of the group getting together necessarily. But, you know, let's give our officers a free rein to deal with the menace of, local terrorism, local bad parade possibilities. They always dredge up things like the stabbings on Halloween, or the shootings on Halloween, or, you know, stabbings at different places in the city. But in fact, parades where people are marching are not places where these things usually happen. You may remember there was a 3,000 or 4,000 person parade on May 1st. I guess some of them had permits and some of them probably didn't. But the fact of the matter is they marched. They did just fine. They policed themselves, if you will. And they didn't need, although they probably had, undercover agents observing them. Anyway, to sideline and stall this whole thing, the process not by which, first of all, there was undercover surveillance of peaceful groups to begin with, that there were no guidelines to begin with. Then suddenly, the guy assigned to investigate it was the police person who authorized it. Outrageous. City Manager Dick Wilson should have been fired off, you know, immediately for that whole affair, insofar as he had knowledge. Mayor Matthews should have resigned. It's ridiculous that she allowed such a thing to happen. But, of course, compounding this abuse and covering up this abuse, what you then had was the whole matter dismissed and sent to the police auditor, Bob Aronson. Just have a sort of a quick, we'll have him take a look at it. Well, Aronson, who has been non-existent for the last 3 years since the Police Review Board was dismantled, turned in a report that said, you know, you can't really investigate yourself. I mean, that doesn't really fly. It doesn't sound, you know, it's a little bit, you know, it stinks a little too much. And so immediately, instead of proceeding to discuss and set in place police guidelines, the Public Safety Committee shut down discussion. That's the group that supposedly oversees the police department, headed by Mike Rutkin, who never saw a police appropriation he didn't like, but who likes to pose as the great liberal progressive socialist of UCSC. He's actually the shadow mayor of Santa Cruz in terms of the impact he has on the city council and his relationship with Mayor Matthews. That's my observation and my sense of what goes on. Rutkin is a man of great experience. He's a man who's been around city government for decades, fought five times reelected, the fastest tongue in the West, and agile at lying on a number of issues, ranging from homeless issues to police lack of accountability. And anyway, he headed the police public safety committee. They cut off discussion. They wouldn't allow people to talk about the surveillance guidelines. And instead, they claimed they were going to invite the ACLU in to discuss this issue. Why the ACLU? Well, the ACLU, our local ACLU, had done nothing on this subject. They were completely useless. And they generally continue to remain so, although there have been some recent sort of glimmerings of light because of the work of people like Don Zimmerman. Why has the local ACLU done nothing? Well, it's got people like Mike Rutkin on the board of directors and Sheila Coonerty, part of the Coonerty dynasty, co-chair of the ACLU, previously head of the public, what's it called? Public Works? Public is the downtown commission, that's it. The Downtown Commission that gave us the 15-minute trespass law. That's how committed to civil liberties she is. She doesn't mind sacrificing the civil liberties of an entire community in the parking garages for the convenience of some parking workers and to make them feel safer because they can clear everybody away. It's problematic whether they will be safer, but certainly gives them more power, doesn't it? I mean, maybe that's the issue. Anyway, the issue which I'm hoping to talk about and hear from Rico Thunder about here on Free Radio is the issue of police spying. And you can read about it on Indy Bay. The ACLU of Northern California, as I said, filed Public Records Act requests at the request of Rico Thunder to get the details behind this Spygate stuff. And they did get some, finally. Initially, I believe Public Records Act requests were ignored. However, when ACLU stepped in, the police department got a little nervous and did give out some records, which I was able, after some friction, to place in the library. And they're there now. And also, of course, when the Deputy Chief Vogel did his own investigation of his own spy activity, he produced a report that included some more documents, which I believe may also be in the library. The police auditor came out with a report, as I said, that said, and you can get all this on Indy Bay, go to Spy, look for Spygate or SCPD, Google for that use the search engine on Santa Cruz, on indybay.org/Santa Cruz if you want to look it up. He found out that, we have a number of documents that are available and they're online, but what is the policy in the future? Will the police department be held accountable for this? Will the mayor and the city manager be held accountable? Of course not. I mean, there's no chance in a million they'll be held accountable for it. This is their standard business practice. They do it. The police department is, you know, what keeps the riffraff away and stops potential political problems with lefty groups as well, though there hasn't been, you know, there's a lot more talk than action in that area anyway, locally. So what happened was after the police auditor came out with this, you can't investigate yourself concern, instead of setting up new guidelines and having them open to the public for discussion, they simply took Police Chief Scarry's made-up-on-the-spot guidelines about police surveillance and said, well, we'll meet about this in closed session. And they had to say they supposed that we can have closed meetings with an ACLU representative, Mark Schlossberg, who had filed the Public Records Act request, city manager, police chief, some city council members, I imagine, and so forth. And they canceled several meetings, and they came up with essentially nothing satisfactory to the ACLU or to the people who were concerned about this. I'm going to read you now the police spying scandal policy story by Rico on Indy Bay. He wrote this a couple of days ago, urging people to go to city council, where he showed up on Tuesday night and spoke at oral communications, a public comment period when you could talk about anything you want for 3 minutes, if Cynthia Two-Minute Matthews feels okay about it at the time and doesn't have some business speakers who might want to take priority. That's actually not fair to say. She has been fairly regular about allowing people 3 minutes. And on occasion, I think one occasion, she allowed people more than, allowed an extra speaker or two. However, I unfortunately did not make this meeting because I didn't know that Rico was going, and I didn't know that the issue was going to be wasn't on the agenda, but it was on the agenda of some people who came to speak. However, he wrote this about 2 or 3 hours before the meeting. Join us at Santa Cruz City Hall at 6:30 p.m. tonight to express your concerns and outrage about the failure of the police spying policy. In contrast to the promises of the City Council's Public Safety Committee on May 29th, including Council Members Rotkin, Porter, and Ryan Coonerty, the new policy will go into effect without any public transparency, without any opportunity for public comment, and without any review or discussion by the City Council. According to Mark Schlossberg of the ACLU, contrary to his expectations, the process of drafting the policy was not a collaborative one and involved one initial meeting and one opportunity for minor changes. According to Mayor Matthews, in a letter to activists, and he quotes Mayor Matthews, the process used to develop the policy is summarized in a memo to City Council from City Manager Dick Wilson, who writes, we had a meeting that included City Attorney John Barisoni, Police Chief Howard Scarry, Police Auditor Bob Aronson, ACLU Attorney Mark Schlossberg, and me, Dick Wilson, at which we discussed the issues the policy revision needed to address. We agreed as to what those issues were and in concept about their resolution. John Barisoni prepared a revised policy, and I sent it up to Mark Schlossberg, inviting him to offer additional minor but not major comments. That was entirely appropriate. I haven't heard back from him. Howard Scarry, the police chief, will implement the revised policy July 5th. Mayor Matthews continues, you'll note that the policy will not come back to the City Council for a vote. It has been developed and will be implemented according to our earlier decision. I am attaching the final draft copy of the policy. We expect it to be issued in this form or something very close to it. Two things should be said before we look at the policy specifically. First of all, this policy was supposed to go back first to the Public Safety Committee, where there will be some opportunity for public discussion and interaction, and then to the City Council for a final vote and even more public discussion. What Mayor Matthews is saying here, in deference to the real ruler of the city, Dick Wilson, city manager for life, is they're just going to implement the policy that they've created themselves without any public discussion. Rico Thunder continues in this story on IndieBay.org. The new policy crafted behind closed doors and put in place on the same day it will be published allows police tremendous latitude in monitoring the activities of activists and community groups. The new SCPD rule builds on a hastily thrown together one-page policy created, and he might add, by the police chief, after the police spy scandal broke. It puts only a few restrictions on police undercover operations and does nothing to limit other police monitoring of First Amendment activities. Under the new policy, even if you are engaged in constitutionally protected First Amendment activities, Santa Cruz police will still be able to videotape you inside or outside of your home, audio record you, listen to your phone calls, look at the mail you are receiving, make notes about your organization, tail you, monitor your website, subscribe to your email lists, and examine your membership lists. Activists are rightly concerned that the new policy and the process that created it have failed. And that encourages people to come to City Council. This was written several days ago, as I said. There's a prior story which goes into more detail, which I'll read. Report back of police spying. Well, in short, Rico writes, on Thursday, June 22nd, it doesn't look good. According to Mike Rotkin, a new police policy on police surveillance will be published within a week or two. However, we are not terribly confident it will represent a strong policy with all the needed checks and protections. As a reminder, here were our bare minimums for a policy. Explicit protections for and definitions of First Amendment activities. Limits on police powers regarding First Amendment activities. Steps the police have to take before considering monitoring a group. Clear accountability and limited authorization. Rules of conduct for undercover officers, infiltrators, and informants. A strong auditing requirement. After the City Council's abrupt turnabout following the police auditor's pan of the internal police investigation of police spying, the council assured us that they would work hand in hand with the ACLU to create a policy that protected citizens' First and Fourth Amendment rights, put limits on police power and conduct, and provide adequate checks and balances. But a month into the process, city managers were still stonewalling the process. After pressure by citizens, the process finally got going in fits and starts. Rather than use the draft policy provided by the ACLU of Northern California, based on the San Francisco Police First Amendment policy, city managers based their first draft on the grossly inadequate policy hastily thrown together, concocted by Scary, again I add, after the spying scandal. That's the police chief, Howard Scary. There has been little back and forth with ACLU lawyers, only one meeting and one opportunity for their review. Many of the ACLU changes were rejected without any attempt at explanation. The most important failing of the proposed new policy is that despite our repeated concerns, the policy only deals with undercover officers, not the greater issue of police monitoring of peaceful groups. The proposed new policy suffers from many major inadequacies. One, it covers only undercover activities. Two, it contains no definition of First Amendment activities. Three, it contains no limits on when to monitor First Amendment activities. Four, the approval process is quite lax, even allowing a deputy chief to make the decision. Five, there are no limits on sharing information with outside agencies. Six, the audit is weak. Facts of a violation of the policy are not made public in an audit. The policymakers have taken a few of the suggestions made by the ACLU, but have largely ignored the most important aspects of the ACLU advice. Dick Wilson's letter says the final policy will be published, but not yet approved, on July 5th. It seems that they will push a weak, severely limited, half-baked policy through as soon as possible, claiming that they crafted a good policy hand-in-hand with the ACLU. In the next few weeks, we are trying to meet with council members, the local ACLU, the ACLU of Northern California, who's done the bulk of the work on this, and in general, raising a fuss that they are trying to bury the issue with a half-assed policy that still does not protect the rights of citizens. We encourage you to convince city council members that we will never accept police spying on our political and community groups and activities. And by the way, if you want to call city council right now, you can, 420-5020. Again, 420-5020. There's a 24-hour voicemail. You can leave a message about if you're concerned about this issue. Then you can also go, if you go to indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, you can find out, you can read Dick Wilson's response to the ACLU, in which he essentially tells them to fuck off. You can read the text of the proposed police spying law that will become policy. Doesn't need the city council approval because the SCPD worked for Dick Wilson, not for the council. However, Dick Wilson does work for the council, and they will mostly likely want to have something to say about it. However, again, I'd like to get the report from Rico about what happened when he spoke at city council on Tuesday night. I tried to get the tape from the library. It wasn't available when I went there this afternoon, so I'm going to try to get it for the Sunday show and play it then. The remarks of Mike Rotkin, who, Rico says, simply lied about the issue when it came up. He lied about the promise of transparency. He lied about the promise of more public comment. He claimed that that was never, according to Rico, he claimed that that was never the case. It was never promised. And, of course, what we need to do is compare Rotkin's comments at the Public Safety Committee, which, by the way, Rotkin generally declines to have recorded for public record, even though this is a permanent standing committee of the city council that is Brown Act compliant. That is to say, they can't ban you from it. They can't close it off. But they make it a point not to record it. Draw your own conclusions here. Of course, they'll tell you that it's a budget-saving measure, I'm sure. Another document that's of interest here is the letter that Mark Schlossberg wrote. I suppose the really interesting thing is the actual policy that's being recommended, and I probably should read some of that to you. It's available. You can download it as a PDF, again, from indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, the story about spying. Just go to that website, and you will be directed to it fairly expeditiously, fairly quickly. It's a Section 16 departmental directive, undercover operations, and the problem is this is 2.5 pages long. I'll read it, but I haven't parsed it very carefully, so I can't give you much intelligent comment. Undercover operations, First Amendment activity, so it only covers undercover operations, not more broadly investigations into First Amendment activity that may involve different groups and committees. Not just undercover operations, when they can actually put an agent in a group. So the very idea of protecting groups from, let's say, having records kept on them, being videoed by police even openly, and information gathered openly and then kept in files, none of that is covered, apparently, by this order. But let's see what it says. 6.10.1, Purpose and Scope. The Santa Cruz Police Department supports the right of citizens to freely associate without government interference, respects the protections afforded Americans by the First Amendment, First and Fourth Amendments of the Constitution of the United States, I suppose I should read it this way, and respects the right of privacy guaranteed to individuals under the state and federal constitutions, since it sounds like President Bush is talking, and he's talking about Iraq. I mean, this sounds about as convincing as that kind of speech. In other words, this is the flowery opening, right? The following policy has been established for undercover operations with these precepts in mind. Undercover operations. Members of the Santa Cruz Police Department shall not undertake an undercover criminal operation that entails the investigation of First Amendment activities of persons, community groups, or organizations unless, 1, there is articulable and reasonable suspicion to believe that the subject of the investigation is planning criminal activity or is engaged in criminal activity that constitutes a hate crime or a crime that is reasonably likely to result in personal injury, property loss, or property damage, and 2, the subject's First Amendment activities are relevant to the criminal investigation. absent exigent circumstances that require an undercover investigation to commence immediately, the police department will not undertake any such undercover investigation unless it has first sought to gather information it seeks through direct and open communication with the subject of the investigation of the subject's membership. Authorized undercover investigations shall use the least intrusive tactics or techniques possible given the circumstances. Examples of less intrusive techniques include tactics such as information, such as researching departmental records or researching public records, the internet, or other information sources accessible by the general public. This was brought out because the investigation done into the do-it-yourself last night peaceful parade, the investigators claimed they didn't even know the event was political, that they thought it was some kind of a, you know, potential riot being planned by people who had no political purposes whatsoever, when in fact, of course, it had to do with taking back public spaces, which has been a major political issue all along. In the studio with me is Craig Canada, well-known homeless commentator on a number of issues. Craig, you're a man who keeps in touch with the Santa Cruz Sentinel by arguing with retards, Neanderthals, and would-be liberals on their forums. Any comments on anything you've heard so far?
Well, no, not really. You mean about this here? No.
The spying issue, right?
Yeah. No. I don't know a great deal of detail about that. As far as the background here about what's been going on, I understand, you know, that they want to organize a parade, and they should be able to do it without having the police come in there and spy on them.
Well, perhaps some of you homeless activists need to be watched instead. I understand there are kind of plans afoot to have demonstrations at City Hall, sleep-ins, criminal camping, maybe afoot. You can never be careful. I mean, that's why the police need to keep an eye on these things.
I don't know what to say to that. I mean, I realize you're being sarcastic. I don't see the homeless people as that much of a problem. You know, I have been sleeping under a bush with a computer for like 6 months now. And on the sidewalk.
Indeed. Continuing with the fine policy that will be coming into effect without any public discussion or comment on July 5th, if Rico Thunder's commentary... Actually, I guess it's Mayor Matthews' statement and Dick Wilson's statement, if Rico is quoting them accurately. When covert surveillance becomes necessary, the police department, whenever feasible, shall conduct that surveillance from a public location before undertaking surveillance from private property with or without the property owner's consent. So before they raid your house, they'll keep an eye on you from the sidewalk. Tactic...
You
know, go ahead.
You asked me about a comment, and I did think of something now that I've had a chance to think for a few seconds. A guy that I know, a homeless guy, told me several weeks ago he was arrested. He was smoking a bowl in Depot Park at 9:30. He told me he wasn't booked, didn't go to the jail. Instead, they put him where the surveillance is. And you're talking about surveillance here. He told me that you can see all over town. I said, you know, I know they have cameras on some intersections. He said, no, you can see everywhere. And what really impressed me about this is... if anybody knows all the little hidden nooks and crannies in town, and if anybody knows if they can see all over town or not, it's a homeless person.
Well, let me understand this. Now, are you saying that this homeless guy who was arrested was taken to a room in which there were a number of video screens where police were watching different locations in town?
Yeah, that's what he told me. He said they didn't take him to the you know, now that I don't know where that is actually myself, is that at the police station on Center Street where that is? He said it was down in the basement. And I didn't really think about it, you know. He was very angry, and he just happened to mention that in passing. I assume he wasn't booked. He had cash on him when he was taken, which was not returned, $120, he said. His marijuana was taken. He had just gotten his disability. This was on a Friday night after he had just gotten his disability. And he indicated that he had just spent $300 on a place to live for the next 3 weeks. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have gotten that. Would have gotten that, and he wouldn't have had it.
Did he say what he was taken in for?
No, I guess he wasn't taken in for anything except to harass him. He was released, he said, at 2:30 in the morning. He didn't get his clothes back. He was out there in his shorts. Luckily, his friends was there with the remainder of his stuff. I guess what they didn't take. evidently his possessions were not booked.
Mm. And so he got his possessions back, or?
Not what he took with him. His money, his clothes that he was wearing when they took him in, and that's what he says.
So he got his clothes back, but he didn't get anything else back?
No, he didn't get his clothes back. They put him out there without his clothes. His friend, his friend had his backpack, which had more clothes in it.
Got a caller here. Let's see if we can get this. I'm interested, though. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Craig and Robert.
Robert.
Is this the infamous late as usual but still fighting Rico Thunder?
That's what it says in my police file. Yes.
Indeed. Now have you been following the show? I've been reading 6.10.2 undercover operations, the new policy that severely limits the police in their making sure that they abide by the much beloved First and Fourth Amendments.
You clearly are running short of material on your show, Robert. That you're having to read Directive 6.10. That's a bad one.
Without you present, what can I do? You know. But now that you're here,
we can
move forward. I've mentioned already some of the background of this, the fact that on July 5th, according to what you posted on IndieBay.org, that Matthews says, that Wilson says, that this policy will be implemented, the one I'm reading. I've read most of it. Maybe I should read some more of it, and you can interrupt me with commentary. Is that something we can do?
Because sure, that'll work just fine. Oh, wait a minute. You're going to read 6.10? I could probably summarize it better than without having to...
Why don't we do this?
Subject your listeners to such
a
thing.
Well, it's interesting. I want to hear your summary, but I think we want to be fair to our police department and perhaps to our city attorney.
Due process, as Ryan Coonerty always stresses when it comes to police.
Due process, actually, is what we're talking about here. But, you know, I did notice, I mean, I read about a paragraph or two of it already, but I noticed that one thing that was claimed is that it begins by saying that the SCPD shall undertake an undercover criminal in operation, whatever that is. It's defined in a footnote, I guess, for purposes. This policy, undercover criminal investigation, undercover investigation, undercover operation, will be defined to include covert surveillance whether conducted from public or private property. So it's not going to be spying on you. If it entails investigation of First Amendment undefined activities of persons, community groups, or organizations, unless, one, there is articulable and reasonable suspicion to believe that the subject of the investigation is planning criminal activity or is engaged in criminal activity that constitutes a hate crime or a crime that is reasonably likely to result in personal injury, property loss, or property damage. Now,
Wait a minute, Robert. Yeah. You must have missed something. I didn't hear the part where it said what kind of crime or that it drew the line at, say, a misdemeanor or a felony.
Well, it doesn't.
It sounds like from the reading that you just read that any old crime, as long as somebody could articulate that it was going to happen, say bad parking or.
Well, no. It doesn't say whether infraction, felony, or misdemeanor. That's true, but it does say that constitutes a hate crime, which is actually.
No, that's an or. So it says.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying that
reasonable
is planning. You're saying
reasonable, articulable suspicion of a crime or a hate crime.
Well, it says reasonable suspicion to believe that the subject of the investigation is planning criminal activity, comma, or is engaged in criminal activity. And here's the question: does this next phrase modify both those things? Does it say planning criminal activity or engaged in criminal activity? And I think it does. That constitutes a hate crime or a crime that is reasonably likely to result in personal injury, property loss, or property damage.
Well, it's poorly written, but what it really means is that.
But if it were that this means that you can't investigate unless A, you have reasonable suspicion that there is a planning or engagement in criminal activity that constitutes a hate crime or crime likely to result in personal injury, property loss, or property damage, and that your First Amendment activities are relevant to that. That's the second part of that. Would that be a definition you would agree with? And if not, why not?
Well, putting aside my squeamishness about cops investigating people in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer if cops only investigate people if there is property damage or possible injury. Probably my biggest beef with the new policy is that it only covers undercover operations. So if they want to tap our phone because they suspect maybe kind of, because you're political, say, they can still do that. This policy doesn't restrict that. If they want to tail you, they want to make notes on memberships of your groups, they can still do that. So, in a sense, any of the minutiae of the law is a bit moot because it only applies to undercover operations.
Right. Actually, I'm reading it over myself, and though it sounds actually like there may be some teeth in this on first reading, the more I read it, the less comfortable I am, because it says, again, I keep looking at this definition of when it's okay, and you're pointing out it's only restricts undercover operations. It doesn't restrict gathering files, surveillance generally, just the particular undercover operation. Although they do say in the footnote that this is defined as undercover surveillance from public or private property, and it doesn't say it is covert surveillance. So it is covert. We're talking about where they're hiding, where they're doing it, you know, when they're not letting you know about it, rather than, let's say, doing it from a squad car with a guy in a uniform. But they are saying, and it looks like first, oh, well, that's to be reasonable suspicion. It has to be, you know, hate crime or personal injury, property loss, property damage. That's the first thing that jumps out at me. But then I think, wait a minute, let's look at the wording more carefully. Reasonable suspicion to believe that somebody is planning criminal activity or engaged in criminal activity, and your point is well taken. Criminal activity isn't really really defined. And I guess they're saying that constitutes a hate crime or a crime that is reasonably likely to result in personal injury, property loss,
so
or property damage.
Those are all or statements. So let's say
I'm kind of lost in that, I guess.
That they can infiltrate your group if they believe that there is articulable suspicion of a crime, or it's a hate crime, or there's suspicion that there might be property damage or
personal injury.
In that case, they don't have to have reasonable suspicion, right?
It depends,
because it's an or statement.
It depends on whether that modifies both phrases or not. I mean, it's ambiguous. It could mean that.
If I tell you that we can go to Saturn Cafe or Charlie Hong Kong's or the Crepe Place, you're not going to think that maybe we can go to a couple of them.
Right, but it could be that this phrase at the end of that sentence modifies both of the phrases before it. I mean, I'm looking at that. But whether it does or not, doesn't proceed, however, with your general concerns.
Concern is that there's no definition of First Amendment activities. So probably the biggest beef I have is that this whole thing came out of the parade planning spying. And if you read it carefully, you realize that they could still have done exactly what they already did. There was suspicion. They had articulable suspicion that there might actually be a crime that might take place. The crime was actually considered jaywalking or impeding traffic.
Are you serious?
They had at least a concern, though not any kind of suspicion, that there might be, say, property damage. Someone might throw a brick through a window, say.
Can I ask you something? Has this group ever done anything like that before? Was this an ad hoc group? Is this their first meeting? Do they have a history of this?
A history of throwing bricks through windows? No. Parading? Yeah, I mean, we're pretty clear.
Committing crimes.
We're going to parade. Let's have a parade.
The main thing they initially used was the claiming that you hadn't applied for a permit, and that you were describing yourselves as taking back public spaces, and there was an anarchist quality
so,
to it.
Basically, the law that took 6 months to develop, that was the result of a great deal of embarrassment on part of the police and the city council, doesn't actually keep them from doing what they already did.
Point well taken. But after all, we want our people to be completely safe, and how can we be completely safe unless we have confidence in our police department? And how can we have confidence in our police department if we suspect that they might be acting badly? Now, what do you say to that?
Oh, that's that devastating argument I never can get around.
It's a pretty strong argument, yeah. Again, I'm going to keep reading. I'm going to interrupt me as I read this shit, okay? I'm going to read a little bit more, and then you can interrupt me with commentary.
Okay. Part of the challenge of reading it is what you're not reading,
the part that
isn't in there.
Interrupt me and say, hold it, there's something that should be added here, okay?
Okay.
Okay, when covert surveillance becomes necessary, the police department, whenever feasible, shall conduct that surveillance from a public location before undertaking surveillance from private property with or without the property owner's consent. Comment? I'll keep going. Tactics employed by police personnel will comply with existing law, will not entail entrapment. That sounds interesting.
There's a section there that was suggested, originally drafted, by the ACLU lawyer, the guy who has done this for many, many cities and has a great deal of expertise, a section on definition of First Amendment rights. In other words, let's define First Amendment activities and say that police have special, they have to treat it specially because it's a First Amendment activity. But without that definition, this doesn't protect your First Amendment rights.
Because and such a protection was in the San Francisco guidelines as proposed by Mark, as brought up by Mark Schlossberg.
It was in the draft specifically for Santa Cruz that the ACLU lawyer drew up and presented to the city managers, to Cynthia Matthews, to Chief Scarry, and to, I don't know, who else was in that meeting?
John Barisoni, city attorney.
And Barisoni.
Well, they didn't have the benefit of Mike Rutkin's wisdom, I think, was the problem.
They didn't need his duplicity in a group composed of largely institutional people. He's the smiling face of the city, not the brains of the city.
Now, here you are criticizing Councilmember Rutkin, who heads the Public Safety Committee. In fact, you used even stronger words on the phone with me earlier, suggesting that Mike Rutkin might have actually, dare I say it, lied to the community. How can you say such a thing?
Well, I think you yourself called him a liar in one of the city council meetings and said that you would eat your words if it is untrue. But I guess I'm in the same position. He received a letter hours before the council from Mark Schlossberg, the ACLU lawyer, that basically said the process was inadequate, the policy is inadequate, and we need to talk about it, and you really should not push this through. And so Mike Rutkin smiled and said right before the council and before his peers and before the public television camera that the policy was a good policy. In fact, it was the best in the nation, and it was a process that resulted from emails and meetings with the ACLU lawyer. And it was the best in the nation, and that he thought Mark Schlossberg would agree.
So
now, Mark Schlossberg had just sent a letter hours before that he had read. I asked him if he'd read it in council. He said yes. And that letter had said that it wasn't the best in the nation. In fact, it really didn't resemble the San Francisco policy that we had presented to them earlier, which was better.
So,
and the meetings and emails he referred to was one meeting and one email in which Mark Schlossberg was allowed to make minor changes. So, far from the promised transparent process with lots of public input and collaborative approach, from the words of Mike Rutkin in the March 29th meeting, far from that, it was actually a really closed process that was largely guided by the city managers and excluded the ACLU lawyers.
Now, I'm looking at some scoundrel has placed the letter to Dick Wilson dated June 27th from Mark Schlossberg of the ACLU onto the Indy Bay website where people can read it.
Now, see, that's the letter that I think is a better letter than reading that dumb policy, because the letter takes Mark Schlossberg, in his interpretation of the new policy and what's missing from it. And that looks in the... that. You know, flies in the face of Mike Rutkin's assertion that Mark Schlossberg would say it's one of the best in the nation.
Well, you know that we know this letter was sent to Richard Wilson. Do we know that Rutkin actually read it and received it? How do you know that?
Because I asked him in council, did you read the letter that Mark Schlossberg sent you hours ago? He said yes.
Apparently, he either didn't read it very carefully or possibly he was drinking at the time.
Oh, he just lied right to our face.
So you've lost your confidence in Councilmember Rutkin.
Well, I didn't have much to begin with, but, you know, after that March 29th meeting, I was reasonably comfortable. We thought of that as sort of our victory meeting, right?
Now, the March 29th meeting was at the Public Safety Committee or at the City Council?
That was the Public Safety Committee meeting, but that was the one right after Aronson filed his report and said that he thought that Mark Aronson's the police auditor. He filed his report and said that he thought that the civil rights of the paraders had been violated.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Schlossberg wrote a letter, and Mike Rodkin did a full reversal, where all the council members had previously been saying, you know, this is a tempest in a teapot. You know, this is really nothing to get excited about. These people deserved what they got. They're potentially going to break the law. And this is where they did a complete reversal, March 29th, and said, you know, we've been where you are all along. We absolutely want to support you. You know, we're all in the same boat here. We want to work together. We'll work collaboratively with the ACLU, blah, blah, blah. And,
you know, it's interesting. I have a different recollection of that meeting than you do. I remember that they refused to, that there were two issues, there were at least two items on the agenda involving discussion of police surveillance guidelines. I guess one was the specific incident of the DIY situation, and the other was the broader issue of police guidelines. And you and I and 10 other people who came to that Public Safety Committee meeting in City Council Chambers came prepared to talk on that issue. We were cut back to 2 minutes each. The number of agenda items was collapsed into one item. Ed Porter claimed to want to be interested in what we had to say, but wouldn't allow anybody to talk. He said, you can give me written comments later. And also, there was a refusal to consider anything like putting a freeze on surveillance of peaceful activity pending the establishment of clear guidelines that would protect the community. So my recollection of that meeting was it was bullshit. I mean, I guess I took a different perspective on it than you did. You
know. Well, I mean, it's a certain amount of bullshit, right? Like, it's a council meeting, right? So it has a good bit of bullshit in it. All those things you said are true, but probably the most noteworthy thing is that one agenda item that got collapsed from two ended up getting canceled to where they figured they didn't have anything to talk about, because at this point, after they received Aronson's letter and after they received Mark Schlossberg's letter, they decided that we're all on the same page here. We all wanted a policy on police spying.
Right, and there was no point in even talking about it until after it was discussed.
Sure.
And, of course, after it was discussed.
We're in such agreement, there's no reason to even talk about it.
Right. Yeah, the less we say, the better. My reaction to that, of course, was that they were shutting us down there, and they were shutting us down, and that this bureaucrat-heavy committee, even with Schlossberg in it, and he wasn't even in it, apparently. He was allowed one meeting and then an email, if you're correct in your analysis.
Yes.
So
and that so the problem we have is not just nitpicking and by any means. It's... we have a problem with the policy. We have a problem with the process that came up with that policy. It was a pretty corrupt process, start to finish.
A corrupt process at the Santa Cruz City Council? Surely you jest.
I mean, corrupt in the sense that what was promised was not by any means what was delivered.
You mean they broke their word to the community?
They broke their word to the community.
My goodness. It really hurts me to hear you criticizing the city council in this manner. Now, I understand you have some riotous activities that you're planning, possibly with undercover surveillance.
Strictly speaking, I don't imagine it'll be riotous.
Certainly not, yes.
Now, for my law defense, I'll say at this point that I don't intend for it to be riotous.
What about your terrorist activities at the very least? Designed to
the line is always drawn a little closer to where we all are.
As the Patriot Act would put it, unduly influence through threat or coercion a public body. I believe that's one of the definitions now in the Patriot Act, which will put you into the terrorism category.
A pretty broad coalition of people have been working on this issue since January, and it's definitely not all the people are even last night paraders. Some of the folks are just old time lefty radical rabble rousers in town who want to not see their First Amendment rights squashed, and so there's a recognition among a bunch of people, including three esteemed former mayors, that feel that if the police are going to squash our First Amendment rights, that really puts a big fat bummer on our other activities.
Now, are you saying so, three esteemed former mayors are going to be at this 2:30 Wednesday, a week from yesterday, demo at the police department that you're scheming
my
about?
My guess is that they will go as far away as possible, but, you know, that's up to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got together afterward, and after listening to Mike Rodkin lie through his teeth, smiling, of course, that we're done talking. You know, the working within the system isn't working. It probably never has, but it took a while for other people to get there. And so on Wednesday at 2:30, we're going to meet at the Santa Cruz Police Station on Center Street and Laurel.
155 Center, perhaps. Something
and
like
we're going to have a little old-fashioned rally and hoopla and press conference, and then we're going to have a funeral procession for our civil liberties, and then there's going to be some direct action at the end of that.
By direct action, you mean some kind of criminal behavior that we could actually ask the police department to investigate beforehand?
We don't have to ask them. I think they will do their job, perceived job, without us asking.
Well, now, are you saying that three mayors and you sat down and discussed this, or are you saying that three mayors were somewhere along the line expressing some nervousness about the way things were going in the police department?
Well, three mayors have gotten up in front of the city council and said, "What? Are you guys crazy? Come on, this is a First Amendment. This is a First Amendment issue.
But
you gotta put a muzzle on the city the city's watchdogs."
But not on Tuesday, right? Not 2 days.
No, not this Tuesday. I mean, a lot of people, I think, who are involved in this are just, like, have watched the process and come to a very wise conclusion that it's a large bunch of bullshit. Nobody from the ACO, from the local ACLU, came to the meeting, and their point of view was sort of like, well, why go through the motions? I mean, we'll do whatever we can, but, you know, standing up and doing oral communications in front of the city council is the biggest waste of time ever.
Well, the main reason to do oral communications is you're talking to the community, because a lot of people, including some old lefties who'd like to see changes, watch these stupid meetings. I don't know why, but they do.
I heard you watched it, in fact.
I actually watched the tape of it, but I wasn't able to watch your part of it because somebody put on the wrong tape at the wrong time and the speed was wrong and so forth. I'm hoping to play it on Sunday. We're talking with Rico Thunder, DIY criminal extraordinaire who planned the riotous tumult that happened on New Year's Eve. How many people died in that march, Rico?
Let's see. No one died.
You'd
think, given all the hoopla.
How many arrests were made in that march?
Not a one, actually, come to think of it.
I see.
You know, thinking about it now, it does seem like kind of a tempest in a teapot. Unfortunately, it happens to be our teapot.
Indeed. What can people do? Of course, they can show up at 2:30 on Wednesday at the police department, which is on Center Street, right past Laurel, as you head out toward the boardwalk. And what do you want them to bring? What kind of items would you like them to?
Well, this is a sort of New Orleans Nolan style funeral parade.
Trumpets
so
and so.
Dress in black, but we'll have a riotous time. So. You know, bring some noisemakers and get all arted out if you want to. I mean, it's called
how about the bourbon?
It's called the Last Rites Parade.
We had a question from our in-studio, sometime alcoholic, Craig Canada. Craig, what's your question?
Oh, well, no, you said a New Orleans funeral, and I said, well, what about the bourbon?
Oh, well, BYOB, bring your own bourbon.
Bring your own bourbon. So in other words, you're suggesting going to be open containers, which is criminal activity, and I'm going to have to inform the police department of this immediately.
Word on the street is we might actually not walk strictly on the sidewalk. This might actually be a parade, like in a street sort of thing.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, blocking traffic?
Again.
You know, this is the kind of stuff that I observed.
Day of our silliness, New Year.
I remember, not only on New Year's, but I've seen more recently a riotous band of sofa carriers threw down couches at Church and Pacific on one evening and caused untold amounts of consternation by traffic goers who wanted to move their cars forward, and they just sat around and lounged about and listened to music. Now, you intend some kind of criminal behavior like that?
I don't deny such a thing.
You deny nothing.
I neither confirm
and,
nor deny.
Well, I'm afraid we may have to call in some outside police agencies to keep a clear eye on this whole thing. What can people do who are more timid, who don't want to come to the protest, but who would like to say, well, we'd like our First Amendment, please, sir? What would you suggest to those folks?
Oh, well, they're giving it up, you know? It's like the thing about rights is that you fight for your rights, and to the degree you resist, you're free. Because if you wait for people to give you your rights, they're not your rights.
Now, you know, Rico, you're also a man who's put a lot of energy into the free school program. Any courses coming up this week or next week that might be of relevance to people wanting to learn how to fight for their rights?
Is the Fight Back class? I don't have a calendar. Oh, yes, I do. Hey, check that out. Let's see. Classes that are useful. There's a Fight Back class. I don't think it's coming up this week or next. But later on, there's a Surviving Police Encounters class. And at some point, there's a Practical Security Culture class.
And not to mention Surviving the Downtown Ordinances class.
Surviving the Downtown Ordinance, one of my favorites. And actually, I don't know whether you realize this, the happy synchronicity is that at 6 p.m., halfway through your class, or a couple hours after into your class, there's actually going to be something that probably is illegal that might come up against downtown ordinances, a class called Knitting in Public, in which people will be knitting right downtown in front of Cinema 9, probably even sitting on the sidewalk.
Sitting and knitting.
Possibly laying on the sidewalk.
And all that's missing are the guillotines, eh? Well, we're talking with Rico Thunder. You know, if you want to call in and talk to Rico, you can try calling in 469-3119 if you have any questions. You can also post questions on indiebay.org, where he's written some really interesting updates, posted some documents that are helpful in understanding what sounds to some, may sound to some like an arcane situation, you know, police surveillance guidelines for peaceful protest. Why bother? There isn't any peaceful protest anyway. There isn't any protest at all, really. I mean, isn't that a thing of the past? I mean, we have our war in Iraq, and you know, and our five protesters every Friday at Peace Friday. What are you looking for there, Rico?
Well, I'm hoping that we'll get, you know, more than the, what is it, STP, the same 10 people, out at this hoopla. It promises to be fun. I think we'll have a good time, and if nothing else, it'll be dramatic. So I guess I'll revise my answer. The timid people who feel a little bit nervous about civil disobedience still want to do something. They can come out and they can sort of timidly follow along in the sidewalk and sort of slowly sneak into getting the spirit in there.
And bring
your
video
blood.
Cameras, bring your audio tape recorders, bring your trumpets for the New Orleans funeral.
Absolutely.
But
so
also,
bring trash, instruments, dress in black, you know, be prepared to make trouble for people who are ignoring our concerns. We'll make some demands.
Well, you know, there are, these people do have homes. Perhaps we should visit them at home and chat with them about this issue.
Oh, I think that's coming up. Sometimes, like for me, some of my best ideas come like really late at night, sometimes even in the early morning. And so I want to do others that same respect, but you never know.
But I hope you don't make, you know, I hope you don't make the mistake of entering a parking garage and spending more than 15 minutes there, because that would, or even spending any time at all without a vehicle, because that would be mixing the issues, and we don't want to do that. Or let's say sleeping at night with homeless people. You want to make sure you've got your issues sort of in order, right? You don't want to mix them all up, right?
You just want to make sure you have money. That's the answer, Robert.
Have money and keep, you know, make sure that you don't alienate certain members of the ACLU. Find the word homeless a difficult word to pronounce.
Well, I have to bid you adieu. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, they're welcome to write scathing commentary about my, juvenile pranks and
extremely juvenile. I mean, I would have nothing to do with you except, I'm getting paid to do this, right?
Rico@thespoon.com.
Rico@thespoon.com is your email.
And probably the best way to brainstorm with other rabble-rousers about the next Wednesday's Last Rights Parade is to probably hop on Indie Media and just post a comment.
IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz. Thank you, Rico. Appreciate your calling in.
Robert, thank you, as always.
Hey, good to hear you, Rico. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open. For those of you who have any comments, 427-3772 is the number. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. Catch me off air at www.huffsantacruz or 423-HUFF. Phone number if you want to call and leave a message. I will pick it up. I'm going to play a little while I'm waiting for this flood of calls, possibly from the police department. Who knows? Actually, I don't think I've ever received a call from a police officer as such. So all you officers out there, feel free to call in. I'm happy to talk to you on these issues. I won't just mock you. I will talk with you. And so perhaps we can all reason together, as Lyndon B. Johnson said as he was bombing the Vietnamese. What do you think? Next up is a bit, little from Julia Vinograd, the Berkeley poetess, and some genuine police activity in Berkeley. But still in the studio with me is Craig Cannon, in case you want to talk about medical marijuana, homeless living or dying, if you will, any of the subjects you've heard brought up today on this show. Commentary, anything you want to say, Craig?
Oh, I was just going to add, or just about anything else if I feel qualified to talk about it.
And man is, of course, overqualified. We won't get into that now.
Drug bust. I saw this. Two cop cars drove up in front of the coffee shop yesterday afternoon while a large dog barked and howled. The guy I was talking with poked his nose out, then shrugged. Weekenders, he said. Drug bust. Two guys. They shouldn't be here. I went to see. The chained dog belonged to one of the kids being searched and handcuffed. They looked mainly worried about their backwards baseball caps stay at the right angle. The large dog had more sense and wanted to bite someone. The kids' faces bothered me, a kind of young blankness. Suddenly, I was sure they were virgins, both of them, still more scared of girls than cops. And now their first time would be as fresh meat behind bars. I didn't want to think what would happen to them. I wanted to do something. I asked the cop what would happen to the dog. That's roughly the way it played.
And the name of that poem again is?
Drug Bust.
And you actually saw this?
Yep, right in front of here.
Where? This is on Telegraph Avenue?
Yeah, in front of the Med.
Wow.
I was talking to a real guy who went out and checked. That was what he said. This is also in the new Street Spirit. The Son of War. When they crucified the Son of War, they stripped off his uniform and nailed him to the naked back of Mary Magdalene, standing upright with slender, outspread arms. Mary Magdalene sings the same song she'd sung the troops whenever they marched past her window, her full breast spilling from her red dress. The Son of War knew it all too well. When they crucified the Son of War, his hands were naked of weapons, much worse than his naked body. He could almost hear his sergeant giving him a dressing down in front of his unit while he tries to stand at attention with Mary Magdalene's noble and familiar rump rubbing warmly against his own. Soldier, you think that machine gun your government paid for is like your glasses or your car key, and there'll be a lost and found desk in the middle of the next battle? Soldier, you're an insult to your country. Without your weapon, you don't exist. I'm staring right at you, soldier, and nobody's there. The Son of War tries to squirm with shame, but the nails hold him still. When they crucified the Son of War, a rose vine grew from his spilled blood, wrapping around both bodies. Thorns and scented petals press into every inch of Mary Magdalene and the Son of War. When the roses open, there are faces inside. The Son of War's dead buddies. One of the roses stunk of beer farts and dirty jokes. And the girl back home in a pale pink rose spits at Mary Magdalene. Mary laughs. When they crucified the Son of War, the heavens opened for him. But all the saints were singing Mary Magdalene's song, and saints shouldn't even know such words, much less sing them. When they crucified the Son of War, he turned away from heaven, looking for a place where he belonged. It had been so long he'd forgotten the words, but he was looking for a place of peace.
And the name of that poem again is?
The Son of War.
It's The Son of War. It doesn't like sound like anybody I know, of course. Thank you, Julia. Any updates on the Berkeley scene? Or?
Well, there was a People's Park anniversary thing, and it was the 37th anniversary, and I'm not quite sure when the date was last week.
How'd that go?
I think it was nice.
Any no hassles with police? Fairly big turnout?
Oh, I didn't stay for the whole thing. A couple of bands, sort of a cosmic klezmer band started out. Michael Delacour wanted to rebuild the Free Box again. And I don't know quite how that turned out because I didn't stay for the whole thing.
You know, the free box has been repeatedly removed by the university, is that right?
Yep. I had a free box poem, but it was for a poem contest, and it wouldn't have won because it wasn't politically correct.
No. Well, hey, you can say it here if you want.
Let me dig it up. It's not, I read you the important ones, but...
While you're looking, and we have the poem called People's Park Free Box.
Yeah, they had a contest for these things. I knew mine wouldn't win, so I made it kind of spoof. Why is the free box a rallying cry? Well, not because it's free. We fight over it, sell loot to each other. It's swaggering pirate booty. When the free box is the cursed black pearl and all the guys look good as Johnny Depp. Not whimpering charity victims mumbling, thank you. Why is the free box a rallying cry? Because they keep taking it away. Because it's bad for us. Like candy for children, like drugs, like sex. The free box will rot our teeth and rot our minds and get us pregnant. It's bad for us, so they take it away. But we're bad for us, so we want it back. He got this for me from the free box, right in front of two big guys who are going to sell it. A girl shows off her satin scarf to her friends. She tosses her curls and admiringly whispers, "He's so bad."
Thank you, Julie.
Okay.
I see my...
Yes. That was Julia Vinograd. Berkeley poetess, has written about 45 books of poetry. I'm particularly enamored of her work. If you like it, there are several books in the main Santa Cruz library by Julia Vinograd, V-I-N-O-G-R-A-D, and she's, of course, you can Google for her if you want to check out her stuff online. So her poems are often on thestreetspirit.org, which is the online version of the Street Spirit newspaper, which is still being hawked here in Santa Cruz by homeless vendors. If you want to sell the Street Spirit, you can sell it if you're homeless or low income. Get in touch with Thomas Levitt. You can go to his place, which is right behind Red Wing Shoes on Soquel Avenue, across from Albertsons. He's just walk into that parking lot area, go past the first or second storefront as you go into the parking lot behind Red Wing Shoes, and you'll find Thomas's Godmama's Forge, where he and Ganilla work, and there are some Street Spirits available. And you can also catch Julia Vinograd's stuff on thestreetspirit.org, and also some articles about Santa Cruz. Street Spirit, unfortunately, has censored a very good activist, Becky Johnson, and I hope that, though I actually have very little hope they're going to change that, it's unfortunate that that got done. It's unfortunate when homeless activists are censored. It's Free Radio you're listening to. You may remember 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. In the studio, keeping an eye on things, is Craig Canada, who's still not got access to the Homeless Services Center, but has not yet filed a written appeal, as far as we know. But he may be doing that in the days ahead so he can get access to his stuff. You can come to a meeting and catch all this, this kind of... We try to assist people in getting their rights restored, at least in minor circumstances. The major deal about, for example, the right to sleep at night is something that's going to require a major upheaval. Liberals like Mike Rodkin, liberals, former liberals, bureaucrats like Rodkin, council members like Rodkin will tell you that Santa Cruz not only does have one of the best police spying surveillance policies in the nation, but it has one of the best homeless services in the nation as well. And people shouldn't be grumbling, but they should realize it's natural and okay to have 1,500 to 2,000 people having to hide at night in his famous hideout or get-out policy, as I call it. Anyway, if you're interested in Julia Vinograd, who writes about these kinds of issues, she's at the library. I was trying to add more books to a California collection of hers, but the law library, the reference librarian at the library, told me that because very few people have taken out her books, they really weren't interested. So if you want more books by Julia in the library, check them out and, check them out as well as looking at them. And then the library may have been motivated to get more of them. Turning now to, unless Craig has something to say, Craig?
I did just want to interject. You had said it's been like two or so weeks now that I haven't had access. And the fact is that, the incident happened when I was supposedly, when I was banned. It will be 3 weeks ago this coming Monday. And I actually haven't been back since then. every time I try to go over there and talk to them on the way, I just get so angry that that I haven't done it. So it's a bit misleading to, in the sense that I haven't tried to approach them since then. And at this point, I don't really see how that would help, because even if I should be granted access to my locker, and the fact is I haven't had access to my locker now in 2.5 weeks. I haven't had a shower in a week. I bought a week in a hotel room. I took an advance against my next month's disability benefit to afford that. And I just lost my train of thought. Besides the fact that, you know, I haven't had access to that, it's just been such an ordeal every time I've gone over there. I have been harassed. People screaming faggot, and to the point where that I, screaming they hate faggots, until the point where that I couldn't take it anymore. And just, I don't see how there's a solution. I really don't.
Well, I think that people have a right not to have somebody shout nigger or faggot or.
Well, you know, I think I have a right to use my locker without being interrupted, like the hour or so every 3 or 4 days that I go over there. But evidently, that's not the case, and that was what this is about.
What I'm saying is that this is something that, if it's brought up in a public manner in a dispassionate way, it's hard to justify, other than to lie about it. So, for example, and that's one of the reasons that Jerry Henry and I and other activists now carry tape recorders, because you have to document and prove when you get into these interactions that you are, in fact, trying to behave reasonably and asserting your rights in an appropriate manner, and you're getting some kind of weird shit from other people who are usually authorities who feel that they have the power to run roughshod over you, which is usually the problem. But, you know, that's something that, you know, it will be up. I think that, you know, you have been given the opportunity. I believe that people have volunteered to go there with you in the future. If you want to take them up in that, that might be something you can do.
Well, yes, I would prefer to have someone with me, because as I tried to say earlier, and I think you stated it better, it's just impossible for me to discuss this, particularly with them and particularly alone with them, without becoming passionate and without becoming overwrought. And that's what I was trying to get at when I lost my train of thought, is I have tried to discuss things with them before, and instead of listening to me, instead I am told what I will do. I was told once, you will go to the armory. That was it. After I'd signed on to the church groups, and I guess most of you don't understand quite what I'm talking about here because you don't understand the logistics of
homeless
services.
Yeah, the armory is a sort of a rather inferior... it's a place with more restrictions than the church groups. It's not open now, but there was in the winter you have the option to go to the armory or on church groups, and church groups, I guess now they have space for theoretically 42 people, but in fact usually the single men's group is always filled, you were telling me, and there's a family group that doesn't get filled because there aren't that many families who use it, which has to do with sleeping on the floors of churches. Each of these groups go to different churches and rotate, and of course then there's the women's group, which you say there's often space in, or
yeah, the families in the women's groups generally are not filled. In the men's groups, they generally turn people away, and last summer they had two men's groups. This summer they only have one.
Interesting. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, as I've interminably mentioned. And if you want to call in, the number here is 427-3772. Here's a few more interviews and, encounters I picked up. This is an encounter in the basement of the county building, where people will go if they have to deal with infraction tickets. That's tickets for camping, tickets for riding your bike the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, tickets for traffic infractions, all in the court of referee Kim Baskett, although on occasion she's not there and there's another lawyer there taking her place. I've often commented this is a fine-generating activity for the city, or it's actually kind of a grueling activity for poor and homeless people who don't have any money anyway, and who often show up there with not only or don't show up because they've got other things they need to do and they can't make their court dates with the I want to say ease, but as easily as people who have houses and transportation that's regular. Here's a. I went into the court to kind of check out what was going on, as I periodically do. I'm concerned that Kim Basket regularly, well, on several occasions, I found her violating the law by misreading the camping ordinance and requiring people to have more community service than they are, in fact, is the maximum prescribed by the municipal code. To her credit, she told me when I happened to bring this to her attention, I tried to bring it to her attention by leaving a note, that did no good, but I happened to run into her in the county law library, and I mentioned it to her, and she didn't believe me, but then when I took her over to the computer and showed her the law, she said, oh, so that means that I don't know how many dozens of homeless people who have been overcharged by her, I don't think they're going to get any refunds, but in the future, maybe she'll pay some more attention to the law and the advocates. She's also, there's a number of problems of leaving your fate in the hands of referees, even though commissioners and judges aren't much better. In theory, you have more options upstairs when you disqualify the referee. It does take more time and energy, so that's something to consider, but I always recommend people disqualify under 170.6 CCP, which is the code you have to cite by number. They won't let you say, I move to disqualify referee Basket. You have to go to the law library and get the number of the code section. This is, in my mind, a deliberate attempt to discourage such disqualifications, which is not surprising. Anyway, here's a conversation in the hallway that I had after watching Basket essentially listen to CSO Pam Bechtel, Community Service Officer Pam Bechtel downtown, and seemed like pretty arbitrarily rule in her favor. We don't have a tape of this because usually these referees don't let you record, and they certainly don't let you broadcast, you see, because might be kind of embarrassing, mightn't it? Here we go. Let's hear what I have of interviewing the person in the hallway about the issue after she came out and got royally fined.
Well, it's about 2 o'clock on June 20th, 2006, and I'm in the basement of the county building outside Department 10, where I guess we have a commissioner, gosh, it's an attorney that doesn't usually do the Kim Basket's fine gathering. With me is
Jamie Clark.
And Jamie, you just, that is your name.
Yeah.
you were present in court, actually, and your case came up shortly after I came in, and you faced Officer CSO Pam Bechtel for a bike ticket.
That's correct.
Now, tell us what happened in terms of this ticket, and then I'm going to ask you a little bit about your feelings about how the court went.
On December 31st, 2005, I had been traveling south on Cedar Street. I turned left onto Lincoln Street, and then I had I was going onto Pacific Avenue to park my bike. There were a lot of people. It was a busy day. I had turned.
It was New Year's Eve, in fact.
It was like 4:30 in the afternoon. Super busy downtown. A lot of traffic. At that intersection, it's a pretty busy intersection. I turned right for about 5 feet, hopped off my bike, and was walking my bike about 20 feet down the road when the officer stopped me. She asked me if I knew why she was stopping me. I told her she wasn't stopping me, that I was walking my bike already when she stopped me, and she gave me a ticket.
Now, of course, you just paid how much for that ticket?
130 big ones.
And you actually paid before you came in?
Yeah, I had already paid.
Why had you paid in advance?
I paid in advance because that's what the lady at the department window had advised me to do.
Did she tell you it was required, or she just advised?
No, it was not required. She told me that I would get a refund if I was found not guilty.
Now, Officer Bechtel, when she was speaking, said that she had made eye contact with you, and she said you were driving your bike the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, somewhere near Pizza My Heart. She nearsighted? Was she lying? Did she have a hallucination? What's the deal?
Liar or hallucination. I'm sure.
She also said she had a conversation with you, and you had said that you were new in town from Atascadero.
I am from Atascadero, but that was untrue. I never told her I was unfamiliar with the area. I've lived in Santa Cruz for 4 years.
Officer Bechtel also said that
Officer Bechtel also said that she had told you that because you've gotten a driver's license, you should be familiar with the rules regarding bicycles and, I guess, the signage on Pacific Avenue. I'm not aware that they give a test at the DMV about signage on Pacific Avenue. But did she make that comment to you that you remember?
Yeah, she definitely did make that comment to me. And as I said in the room to the judge, that I hadn't been riding my bike down Pacific for maybe more than 5 feet in the wrong direction.
Do you acknowledge you've been driving down the Pacific for 5 feet in the wrong direction?
No, I don't believe I did.
But had you been?
Oh, I mean 5 feet tops. 5 feet tops. Mostly I just had pulled over my bike and got off of it and started walking.
Have you had any previous contact with Officer Bechtel?
I don't believe I have, no. Maybe a comment or two.
Count yourself lucky.
Yeah, thank you.
But in fact, so Officer Bechtel is technically correct in saying that for 5 feet you're violating the law.
You know, she never said, well, she said that for about 25 feet I had been in violation of the law, which was a lie.
Well, she was either fantasizing or her notion of 5 feet is different than your notion of 5 feet.
I think about this time the machine started losing battery power. The point here is that Officer Bechtel stands at the corner of Lincoln and Pacific waiting to give citations to people biking the wrong way. And she doesn't even give them warnings anymore. She says, if you got a driver's license or a biker's license or a pedestrian ID card, that's sufficiently relevant, that's sufficient training that somehow that would mean that you know what the rules are on Pacific Avenue. Now, I've talked on the air before about, is it really dangerous to ride the wrong way against the traffic on Pacific Avenue? And I've never really felt that's the case, but there's some who disagree with me because, after all, even though the speed limit is 15 miles per hour, and it's kind of used to be a garden mall, and it's kind of really a pedestrian's paradise. You can walk across anytime you want. It's legal to walk across Pacific Avenue, even though I have gotten a ticket for jaywalking across Pacific Avenue, I have to admit. Some people suggest that, well, you know, you open a door, the car could be going the wrong way and not see you coming, and that it might be considered dangerous riding the wrong way on Pacific Avenue. I've never quite bought that argument. It looks to me like an over-enforced procedure unless there is some real indication of a traffic hazard. If there were a traffic hazard, and that's, in fact, one of the definitions of jaywalking, not just walking where there's no traffic light, but walking in a way that creates a traffic hazard, then I could see the point of it. But I've seen Bechtel so many times simply deliberately go out of her way to catch people. She likes to do it. It gives her a sense of satisfaction, a feeling of power, a feeling of, I'm not inside her, but it looks like that's what's going on. Now, we're getting toward the end of the two-hour Bathrop Spears Broadside show. You're tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and in the studio is Craig Canada with his computer. Last Sunday, four doughty activists decided to inform the public about the new parking garage paranoia law, which you may remember, those of you who have been listening to the show at all in the last 6 months, is a law that makes it illegal to enter a parking garage or parking lot number 9, the homeless parking lot across from the Elm Street Mission, at all unless you're walking directly through or if you have a vehicle or bicycle and are parking that vehicle or bicycle. Or I guess if you're a passenger in that car, you can also, if you're associated with that vehicle, though that's not specified in the actual ordinance, interestingly enough. And you're given 15 minutes to leave the vehicle and or come back to the vehicle when you're picking it up. So that law went into effect technically on June 23rd, which is a month after it was passed at City Council under pressure from Ryan Coonerty, the man who touts himself as being a constitutional lawyer. He's a lawyer who gives classes in constitutional law. One wonders if he's ever taken his own class. Anyway, it went into effect on June 23rd, but since the signs haven't been posted, Matt Farrell, the the brilliant mind behind a lot of this law from the Public Works Parking Authority, has been advising HUF member Thomas Levitt by email that the law won't really go into force until the signs are up, which will happen in a few weeks. Still, activist Crow, as he is called, and he called earlier on the show, you may remember, decided he really wanted to make sure that this law was evenly enforced or and that the public was informed about it. So he, and under the with the support of HUF member Becky Johnson and Bernard Klitzner of the Human Rights Organization and your faithful reporter, me, we went down to the, I guess it's the Locust Street Garage. It's right across, maybe we'll call it the Church Street Garage. It's across from Clouds, right around the corner from the Cinema 9. The bottom part of the garage is being painted, and Crow was giving out citations, I should say, warning flyers to members of the public. I'm going to play this a little of this interaction now, and I'll be playing more of this and other street interviews on Sunday when I come back to do the longer version of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which happens then at 9:30 in the morning. But here's a little taste of what you can do as a citizen to inform the community how to be a good parker and be a good user of public spaces by not using the public spaces.
Over here at Commerce Lane and Church Street, right across from Clouds downtown at the parking garage, which is currently being spray painted at a cost of a couple hundred thousand, or maybe it's $100,000. I'm not sure that there's a large amount of money that's being spent on that. I think it was $220,000 or something. Maybe that's all four garages. I don't know. Rather expensive paint job, but one Councilman Rodkin assures us that it's quite necessary in the city. You, sir, are giving out flyers that say friendly Santa Cruz tourist advisory parking alert.
Yes.
What is this all about?
Well, I'm trying to be friendly enough. I'm a volunteer for the city council as a citizen of Santa Cruz to warn everybody that parks in these three main garages.
Four, actually.
Four are main garages.
And parking lot number nine.
And parking lot number nine. That they have 15 minutes to exit their vehicle and the building, or they can be cited by the Santa Cruz police or arrested.
Well, I'd like to observe you in action. I notice you've been pretty good luck. You're dressed in somewhat less ragged clothing than usual, concealing your secret identity as a amplified music man at the Wednesday market. What's been the reaction? I see we have two younger blonde women in sun attire coming down. Have you been
The reaction's been very good. The people are very happy that I'm informing them that they only have 15 minutes or they shall be cited or arrested.
Sure. Excuse me, what is your view of our new law in Santa Cruz? It says 15 minutes or you get a $124 ticket. What do you think? A good idea? You feel safer now?
Yes, I feel safer.
All right, that's good. Now, what about you?
I feel extremely safer because people won't be hanging out in the parking garages.
So you actually feel better about the law?
For sure.
And you're from?
From Salinas.
Both of you?
Yes.
Well, welcome to Santa Cruz. And
thank
just
you.
Don't spend more than 15 minutes in the park.
The
we find it, it's designed to drive homeless people away.
Oh, okay. Not too bad.
But, you know, there's some risks we have to take. I mean, if a few people die because they're outside, it just happens.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, thank
right.
you.
Thank you very much. Sorry about that. Thank you. So it's about 15 to 3, and vehicles are turning into the... he's giving out a parking alert about how you can only be in a garage for 15 minutes, a law that went into formal effect on June 23rd, although Matt Farrell of Parking Authority has assured us police will not be enforcing for a while, at least until the signs are up. So it's a sunny day. Folks are spraying. Yeah, Crowe is informing all the people driving into the parking lot, most of whom can't park because there's no parking space, but they don't know that because they can't see the second level, about the law. He's performing a true public service. And again, most of these folks are from out of town. He's advising them. So that's good. And so far, we have Bernard, I see you're dressed in camouflage tennis shoes and a good bush, bad bush t-shirt. What's been your experience so far today?
Well, I think it's been hilarious. You know, people really are shocked. You know, the ones that have taken my leaflet, the majority of them are really shocked to hear about this 15-minute law.
Hmm.
And their first reaction, don't we have 3 hours? And I said, you have 3 hours to park the car, but you only have 15 minutes to get in and get out.
Gotcha. So Crow over there is distributing the leaflets to the cars as they go up the rise. He's having a pretty good record. Because most people are, of course, made aware that parking alert is the key issue. And folks are stopping to read the parking alert, or at least to hear Crow's brief description of it. Have you received any police or host scrutiny or gotten any hostile reactions?
Not really. Just surprise reactions. Or people that just want to ignore you when they drive through. And usually it appears that they are in the big subs generally.
Subs?
The SUVs.
Yes.
They don't usually want to stop. But most of the other cars do. For some reason, subs, you know, are a problem. They think that they're beyond the law because they got such big cars.
Yeah, let's listen in on what's happening. We're going to listen in on your next.
Yeah, hey, I got to talk to my kids. Hold on.
Fair enough. Comes Officer Crow trying to solicit a.
Hi, this is a parking alert. You only have 15 minutes to be in your vehicle or the lot where you can be cited or arrested by the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Be in here?
Oh, well, you can park here, but you only have 15 minutes to be in the vehicle or in the lot.
Really?
Yeah, it's a new law that the City Council has passed. Just letting everybody know about this new law so they don't, you know, run into problems with the law. Thank you.
Did you get your flyer?
I sure did.
Did you read your flyer?
So Huff is the funder of this?
No, I'm not being funded by anybody.
It's the funder rather than the funder, actually.
Voluntary action by concerned citizens that other people don't get fined or arrested for you know, maybe changing their diaper. That is an insane law. For sure.
But, I mean, what brought it to your specific attention?
Hearing about they're passing the law here in Santa Cruz. They're passing something that actually doesn't do anything about crime that they've been calling about, you know, and telling people about. And that it's just another law that stifles people from looking for shelter, you know, or open space use. You know, a lot of people are in their vehicles to do little things, chores, eat their lunch, and so forth. They can't do that anymore.
So they're going to be changing the 3-hour limit to 15 minutes?
No, you can have your vehicle there, but you can't be there with your vehicle for more than 15 minutes.
Vehicle is not a threat, but you may be.
Hanging out in the vehicle.
Hanging out is definitely something you should do in one of the more costly cafes.
I see. That makes more sense.
Yeah, it's kind of a scary, one of those scary laws
that all
creep
together.
Up behind you. Before you know, all of a sudden, you just can't be a human being anymore, you know, so...
And we have a caller. Hi there, caller.
Hi.
And you,
volume's a little low, just so you know.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, and what's your name, caller?
My name's Turtle.
Hey, Turtle. So you're interested in doing some kind of survey in the parking lot, parking garages?
Yeah, it seems like we have a little bit of window of opportunity right now to kind of do that. And, yeah, I think that it'd be interesting to go through and, like, just a couple questions, maybe, like, where people are from, where they're visiting from, and then whether this law kind of influences their opinion of Santa Cruz at all.
Right. Well, you know, actually, it was kind of peculiar. I found that people the only two I talked to said that they felt safer. Of course, these were young women from Salinas. You heard that, perhaps. But, yeah, you know, and Crow, if you're out there listening... I don't know if we give out your number, but, you know, Turtle, let me give you a number to call where you can leave a voicemail, a number,
yes.
And I'll give that to Crow. If anybody wants to help with the survey.
I just don't know if I'd be, like, totally confident doing it by myself.
Well, I understand.
I've never done anything like that before. So.
Right. Well, in case you're interested and anybody wants to leave their number to get in touch with Crow, my number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Might want to write that down, 423-HUFF. It's a voicemail. So if you call that right now and say, hi, this is Turtle or whoever you are, if you call in, and, you know, you can reach me at this number, and then I'll pass it on to Crow, and he can get in touch with you.
Okay, sounds good.
And I want to know the results of this survey. I mean, after
yeah,
all, you know, we,
I think
yeah.
that, I don't know what difference it'll make, but I think that's kind of important, especially if we have, like,
well, I mean, you know, who needs the Constitution and your rights anyway? After all, we can trust our local police, right?
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate your calling in.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. And now a little bit more of the experiences of informing the public about the new law in the parking garage situation. And then we're going to be rolling into Uncle Dennis's From the Cream to the Dregs. Stay tuned.
It's an obnoxious law, it's my concern, and it really stifles our freedom. You know, that's particularly what brought my
concern that somebody stay in their car for 3 hours. What's the big deal?
Stay in their car? Well, they could be criminals thinking about causing a crime or doing something criminal in their car.
Here's a parking lot alert.
Speeding ticket!
See, we're such good citizens. We try to catch speeders and, you know, all the muggers and the rapists that are in these parking lots that they say, but they're, you know, they're actually everywhere, but, you know, they're concentrating on this. Eventually. When we get more support, I think, or when we keep doing this to the point where, you know, we might be in jeopardy of getting arrested for letting people know what's going on with the law. That's a possibility. I mean, you know, they could do all kinds of things. And, you know, you're embarrassing the city council.
Yeah, right.
And that seems to be a slowdown. But here we got someone on the air who has a word and response. Hey there, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, there you are. Is this Crow?
Hey, Crow. So you've got a turtle apparently wants to join you in surveying the community. That this could be risky unless you have a car with you.
Excellent. We actually have a vehicle and bicycles. If you enter a garage or a parking lot with a bicycle or a car, mm-hmm. it can be there for 15 minutes and inform the rest of the community about...
We have really a hard time hearing you, Crow. This is the crappiest phone I've ever heard.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I got to go to another payphone.
All right. Well, listen, you want to leave a phone? I mean, you can either leave a phone number or perhaps people can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF and they can get back to you. And
Huff line.
We'll do the Huff line. 423-HUFF and I'll get back to you. I think I have your
right.
number.
I'll go to another payphone.
All right.
Bye-bye, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye. And actually, we're not going to have any time for another payphone because we are 1 minute away from the dread... Cream to the Dregs, which, as you know, is musical heaven for those of you who like the 60s. And for those of us who like the continuing dialogue of people on the streets, it's very frustrating to have all this music taking up airtime. Oh, I don't know what to say. But in any case, that's the story. We're going to go into a final number by Neil Young and give Uncle Dennis an opportunity to set up, much as I would present it. And hope to see you again. If you're interested in joining any protests about the parking garage or surveys or have any comments at all to make about the show, 423-HUFF is the number to call. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on Sunday, or perhaps I'll hear you on Sunday.
And welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 www.freakradio.org. I'm your Uncle Dennis in here for another 3 hours of From the Cream to the Dregs. I want to thank Robert for another fine show. And he, of course, will be back on Sunday, whether you or I like it or not, to bring you more advocacy for homeless issues here in Santa Cruz, as well as news and up-to-date commentary. Anyway, we're going to take a little trip down the back roads and byroads of America, a little place you may have heard of called Telegraph Road.
Walking 30 miles with a sack on his back, and he put down his load where he thought it was the best. Made a home in the wilderness. Built a cabin and a winter store, and he plowed up the ground by the cooling shore. The other travelers could walk her down the track, and it never went further north. Telegraph Road. Then came the mines, then came the arm, then there was a they shut it down. I got a right to go to work, but there's no work here to be found. Yes, and they say we're gonna have to pay.